You're listening to BQN. Assimilate the audio.
Welcome, listeners, to a very special episode of All Good Things, the Star Trek Universe podcast here on BQN and the Fandom Podcast Network. I'm your host, Mark White, and I am joined today by Captain himself, Captain of the Captain's Couch, Captain Jeremiah Brown. Welcome.
Thank you, Mark. It's great to be back. I always enjoy coming on All Good Things.
This is such a treat. Now, listeners might be like, okay, where's all the other hosts? Well, you know, of course, the last couple of weeks have been so busy in Trek news. So Christos has been busy and Amy's been away on vacation. So we've got, Amy visiting, Calvin, and she's out in Europe. So they've been pretty busy. And it's just me. And I knew I was doing Voyager. So I was like, okay, Jeremiah, will you come help? Can we beat me aboard?
Of course. Anytime there's something Voyager related, you know you can count on me.
Sweet, sweet. I was looking to see if we had any feedback. Didn't look like we had any feedback for last week, but we did get a lot of downloads. So it looks like you guys did enjoy Kelvin and I's discussion of The Apple, the TOS episode. So, or maybe it was the escape pod segment. We covered two different Strange Worlds episodes that ate up half of the show. But I don't know, either or.
So I actually didn't get to listen to the most recent episode of All Good Things, but you just piqued my interest with The Apple. I don't know. You may have covered it. You may have not. But one of the cool things I like about the Apple is that Captain Kirk ordered preparation for emergency saucer separation in that episode.
Yes, came up in the trivia. I love
that.
I didn't realize that the original Enterprise could do that, which means they could do it in Strange New Worlds, which we said.
Yes, but here's the thing. Mm-hmm. If the Constitution class saucer separates, it cannot reconnect.
Oh.
It's legitimately a life pod situation only. Oh. They could be reconnected with the aid of a starbase.
Okay.
But the Constitution can't automatically reconnect like a galaxy class.
I'm here for it. I want to see it.
Still, it'd be really cool. In fact, I believe one of the tie-in novels between Discovery and Strange New Worlds, it was while the Klingon War was going on, where Enterprise and Pike was. If I remember the book correctly, the saucer section did detach, and they emergency landed upside down. So the saucer was upside down when they landed, if I'm remembering that novel correctly.
That's a little Poseidon.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now it's time for...
This is the bridge. All hands to emergency escape pods.
Escape pod. In the escape pod segment, we essentially jettison ourselves from the main topic for a brief period of time to discuss the most recent episode of Star Trek. I love saying that because, more Star Trek, new Star Trek. It's wonderful. And this week we're going to be covering the Strange New Worlds episode, Under the Cloak of War. And what a dark episode this was, which tickled me, by the way. I don't know how you felt. Okay. First impressions. Let me ask you first, Jeremiah, what did you think first impression wise of this week's episode?
If it wasn't for those old scientists, this would be my favorite episode of the season.
Nice. Nice.
In fact, I would say they're tied. Those old scientists for all the obvious reasons, but Under the Cloak of War, I love a Klingon story. I love the Klingons. I love them when they're the bad guys. I love them when they're our friends. I love them when there's ambiguity. I just love Klingons. I love them in any form, any iteration, no matter what they look like. I love Klingons. So this episode really had me from the beginning, and I would really love a long trek of showing the Klingon War more in detail.
Yeah. We did not get enough of that previously, so it's nice to see to fill in that gray area, because that's a period of time that's important to canon.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. That was good that it was those old scientists were right before this one, and actually the singing one is right after, because it kind of sandwiches in nicely, like tonally, because this one's pretty dark. So it does throw a little balance. Also, they have been a little bit more camp, a little bit more humorous this season than they were in the last season. And I don't dislike it, because if you watch TOS a lot like I do, it's pretty campy and silly. So
absolutely.
So I'm not shading Strange New Worlds at all for that, because there's definitely a place in Star Trek for that. However, it's nice to see that they can still do other things. They can still do serious when they want to, like what we covered a few weeks ago with the courtroom episode at Estra. And now we have in Under the Cloak of War. There definitely were moments watching this episode that reminded me of Deep Space Nine. There was a little bit of ambiguity. We don't exactly know what happened. I found out through some trivia that there was like 3 or 4 different endings written and filmed that could be potentially released on like a DVD or something, because
interesting,
they didn't really know where to go. The director was like, we're going to film all these different ways to end it, and you guys pick, and I'm going to walk away. So that's kind of cool. I like that.
That is kind of cool. One thing I really like about this episode is it one of the great things that Strange New Worlds does as it is they know how to paint with all of the colors in their box. And this is a good example. This season is a good example of it, far better than the first season, I think. But in that vein, the Enterprise now has a greater brushstroke on its canvas and its involvement with the Klingon politics between Kronos and the Federation. As you see, Pike's Enterprise is hosting a Klingon ambassador for peace early in the Enterprise's life, where we see the next chapter of the Enterprise, the Enterprise A, at the end of her life, hosting a Klingon delegation for what would actually be creating the lasting peace treaty between the Federation and the Klingon Empire.
Oh, that's right. So this is the first step.
Yeah. So that's a nice bridge between not only the Federation and the Klingons, but the Enterprise legacy itself.
Yeah.
Having that tie in, and really all the way through to the Enterprise E, having a Klingon officer on board.
Yeah.
With, you know, the Klingons having such animosity with Enterprise itself, I think that makes a nice broader canvas.
Well, also, before we move on, I want to give a shout out to some of the standout acting that happened in this episode. And Dr. Mbanga and Nurse Chapel, they were just on fire this week. It was great to see more of their backstory, how they met. We found out a little bit more about the super serum. And then we get to, was it the 4th or 5th time we get Clint Howard in Star Trek? He began his career in the 60s in the original series, and here he is back in Strange New Worlds. So it was really cool to see Clint.
Yeah, yes, it was. I enjoyed seeing him very much. Definitely, Chapel is one of my favorite characters, if not quickly becoming my favorite character of Strange New Worlds.
Oh, I love her too. She's amazing. We'd be besties for sure. She's got a little bit of a dark side too. I did.
Yes, she does, and I like that.
Yeah, me too. And she has Mbanga's back, as it proves in this episode. Yeah, she was there. She's Mbanga's ride or die, I can tell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this episode did have a lot of tones of the Dominion War in it too, with the flashbacks, which made me want to see more of the Klingon War, because I really enjoyed the Dominion War.
And I also, before we conclude, I do want to mention that I feel like Under the Cloak of War was an episode that dealt with morality, our own morality, our own thoughts on what is right, what is wrong. And it is sort of left to the viewer to decide, okay, where do you land, right? And here for this week's episode, you know, when we get into the main topic, we're kind of left with a similar choice as a viewer for the Voyager episode. So here we go, like with two Star Trek episodes, you know, one just is a coincidence that we're covering the Voyager episode this week, airing, you know, the same week as the Strange New Worlds episode Under the Cloak of War. So I just thought that was a cool coincidence. Jeremiah, I would love it if you would actually introduce today's topic for us.
I would be happy to. Medical Ethics, Part 8, Voyager Lineage. Tom and B'Elanna are overjoyed about their coming child. However, B'Elanna soon starts to have unpleasant flashbacks about her difficult childhood. She decides to take controversial actions on her own to prevent their child from reliving her past traumas. This is a beautiful episode. It's also a heartbreaking episode.
Yeah.
And it's heartbreaking from B'Elanna's perspective all the way around, from both her past trauma, her present trauma, and her bad decision making.
Now, it struck me, and this is why it's topic one, because it struck me as soon as the episode started, I was like, oh Lord, this is an episode with children in Star Trek. And I typically really dislike strongly episodes with children in Star Trek. You're not going to see me sit down and watch a good old Naomi Wildman episode. But yeah, I don't know. Sometimes they do it right, sometimes not. I want to know, in your opinion, Jeremiah, when does it work and when does it not? And we can both share our thoughts on that.
Well, you know, I never had an issue with a child episode in Voyager. And I agree with you. In the aspect of most television, when a child becomes the centralized figure of a particular episode, I generally roll my eyes and go, oh, Lord, this again. Naomi Wildman never bugged me on Voyager. I quite enjoyed her. And I think that's because she brought out different things in characters that she was paired with, like Seven or Neelix or the Doctor. I thought she brought a different dynamic to those characters, so that I thought she was done well. Where I think that children episodes in Star Trek are bad, I see The Next Generation. Episodes like Pen Pals,
yes,
or Alexander Roshenko. That's where Star Trek fails with children. Where they also get it right is Nog and Jake on Deep Space Nine.
Well, yeah.
So I think Next Generation does Star Trek children episodes badly, but DS9 and Voyager does them really well.
I'm going to partially agree. I think that the episodes of TNG, like there's a one where Picard gets stuck in the turbo lift with those kids and they make him that little sign at the end.
Oh, the Captain Picard Day episode.
Oh, yuck. Oh, eye roll.
Yeah. No, I hate the radishes kid.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Oh, what a dweeb. Anyway, I want to shove him back down the turbo lift. Anyway.
Out the airlock.
So there's episodes like that, but there also is the episode Rascals, where I think that is done really well.
And see, you know, I didn't even consider Rascals because it's the main characters just as children.
Yes.
So I guess that didn't compute with me. I didn't even put that in contention with the ones I was weighing.
But it's an entire episode, pretty much just child actors.
Yeah.
And I don't hate it. I'm actually here for it. It's one of my favorite TNG episodes. I have to agree with you, Jake and Nog, Deep Space Nine. I mean, you can't find a better pair because they're not annoying.
No.
They actually act more like regular kids than I think some of the other episodes where they have adults writing as though they were kids. Like, oh, haha, kids talk like this. But Jake and Nog just talk normal. So I like that.
No, I agree. I love Jake and Nog. I think they were awesome characters and a great pairing, a good duo to have.
TOS has some problematic children episodes as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Now I'm thinking about that one with those screeching little monsters that, like, the planet, they only live to be a certain age, and then because the adults die.
Yes.
Yeah. If I was Kirk, I would have just nuked the whole planet.
Ugh. Oh,
which I believe there's a policy within Starfleet regulations that allows the Starfleet captain to wipe out a planet.
Maybe if it's infested with children. The Deep Space Nine episode of the Ala Moraine, and it's not the name of it. It's Move Along Home, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Did your eyes twitch at the Strange New World trailer when they ended with Ala Moraine? Like, the trailer like had me going like, yes, 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 no, no, not that, anything but that.
I think they can do it right if they just are mercilessly, you know, making fun of that episode. If they do it that way, I will be along for the ride. So let's see. It was written like Stranger Worlds, Lower Decks. They are written for adults. So
that is true. But so was Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, true story. But I think Lower Decks is a little bit more self-aware.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm ready for new Lower Decks, though.
Yeah. Lower Decks. Lower Decks.
All
right. Topic two. Now we're actually going to move into talking about this episode. Is B'Elanna justified in her actions? How well did the backstory do to give you empathy for her?
So, being a, you know, a hardcore Voyager fan, and, you know, very much so with B'Elanna, as Mark can attest of my love for B'Elanna in my own life, naming my fur baby after her and her own daughter, B'Elanna was absolutely not justified in her actions, as I felt that her decision to have her child genetically modified, to me, said things that echoed in my own life of, you cannot be loved because you are not how I want you to be. And unless I can make you in the image I want you, I can't love you. That's how I took B'Elanna's decision to do that.
Do you blame the writers of the episode for not having a strong understanding of the character? Or do you think this is totally in character?
I think this is totally in character because B'Elanna because B'Elanna had such a difficult time accepting her own self. I understand her motivations. I felt that she was wrong, but I understand her motivation to do that.
So for you, the backstory was enough to sort of have empathy. However, you still do not feel like she was justified. You understand it, but you don't think it was justified.
Yes, absolutely. I understand it, but I don't think it was justified. One thing I would, going back to the last topic briefly, where children are done right, is the little girl who played young B'Elanna was amazing. Thought that the casting was an excellent choice for that.
Yeah.
And I believed her as a younger version of B'Elanna.
She did well, in spite of the fact that I really don't like the kids portion of the episode when they're camping. I'm like, oh, there's children.
Yeah. Yeah, the cousins I didn't care for. If it wasn't for young B'Elanna, it would be trash.
She did act very well, though. She was a good little actress.
Yes.
Yeah. For me personally, I don't know. I don't watch as much Voyager as you, so you would be the authority. But in my opinion, I didn't think that the writers grasped her character enough. I just couldn't see B'Elanna, like, because of, I guess her dad left or something, and she thought it was because she was Klingon. And I know she just battled with her Klingonness. I don't know, but I just, to the stuff she did, and we're going to talk about this in the next topic, but with the doctor and almost like, I don't know, and genetically modifying like the baby, just it seems so much.
I'll remind you of the season one episode of Faces, when the Vidians kidnapped her and separated her Klingon and human halves. And that it really took her Klingon side to get through to her human side, because human B'Elanna didn't, you know, wanted to denounce her Klingon side altogether. Didn't want to work with her. And it
that's what makes this so confusing. That episode is one of the things that makes this episode, because she had reconciled at that point.
But did she, though? There's always, even with therapy and healing and forgiveness, there's always going to be the seed of underlying resentment.
Okay.
And with the Klingon pregnancies producing elevated hormone levels and violent mood swings that only a Klingon can experience, I absolutely do feel like this was in B'Elanna's personality.
Yeah.
Is that she was knowing that she was going to be a mother, she started to relive her own childhood and remembering traumas and experiences that she had because of her Klingon half. And that's what motivated her to do that, is she felt that she loved her unborn child so much that she didn't want her to go through what she went through, that she was willing to take these drastic measures to prevent that.
Yeah.
But that's where B'Elanna was wrong, is that she should have immediately loved her regardless. It was really, I think what really did it was when the doctor projected the image and they saw that, you know, she was going to have prominent ridges.
Yeah.
That's where this started for her.
Oh, for sure. And they definitely played it that way in the episode. Like, that's when, you know, the page turned for her, obviously. Usually in these medical ethics series, we would start discussing what would we do in these circumstances and things like that. Like, we have that a lot. Usually, I mean, this is part 8 of medical ethics and whatever. And I'm not going to do that this week, because instead I want to focus on another one of my favorite characters, the Doctor, played by the brilliant Bob Picardo. And I want to talk about the Doctor's violation here. B'Elanna was attempting to manipulate the genetic code of two beings, we forget here. Not only her daughters, but also the code of the Doctor. And were there any consequences? Do you think there should have been consequences? What are your thoughts, Jeremiah?
You know, it seemed very convenient that there were no consequences. There, should have been time in the brig, perhaps. A suspension of duty for, relieved of duty, confined to quarters, a counseling session, something. But it seemed like that was conveniently overlooked.
By season 7, he was being treated as a valued member of the crew.
Yes.
And she violated him to his core. This was like the R word that I'm not going to say, but this was very much an R word that she had done to another being. And it shocked me and shook me. I couldn't believe that she would do that. Like, I don't care how desperate, but that's no bueno.
The only thing I can think of that perhaps, because the Doctor was the victim, that Janeway would have left it to him to decide the course of action. And him being himself, I think, forgave unconditionally and said, let's chalk it up to raging Klingon hormones from the pregnancy, and we'll move from there. It's weak, but that's how I can see it playing out, is that Janeway would allow the Doctor as the victim to have a say in what repercussions B'Elanna suffered.
But you think there probably should have been more repercussions?
Yeah, at least a conversation about it.
And probably if this show is a little bit more serialized in the Strange New Worlds kind of way, episodic / serial, maybe they would have been able to do that. It would have been nice to see, though, like some type of, I guess, maybe not grudge, but just side eye or mistrust between the Doctor and B'Elanna after that because of this. But it was just sort of one of those things that just got washed away. And I don't think it should have been, if we were treating the Doctor as a person and he has his code rewritten, so it's changing who he is fundamentally. Like,
you know, at the same time,
I just found
time,
that really wrong.
I agree with you. Absolutely, I do. But at the same time, if you recall the episode Latent Image, where the entire crew is behind the Doctor's program being manipulated by none other than the captain herself, Janeway may have not had felt that she had a history of treating the Doctor less than flesh and blood.
But was that at the Doctor's request?
No. That's when he was had that recursive error in his program, because he chose to save Harry instead of Ensign Chital. And his program began to break down because he was on a feedback loop.
Oh.
So they erased his memory of the events. And then he, 7 of 9 later, helped him recover those memories. And it all started happening again. And the Doctor caught Janeway editing his program with the holo imager.
Oh, yeah. But that was essentially like repairing like a cancerous tumor. They had to go in there and remove this.
But they did it. But Janeway took the decision to do it without the doctor's knowledge or permission.
Mm.
Did it, you know, basically did it without consent.
Oh, the poor doctor.
So
I just love the doctor.
That's where I'm saying that Janeway is just as guilty of this grievous action as B'Elanna is. So in this episode, Janeway may not have felt that what B'Elanna did even required a reprimand because she herself had a history of treating the doctor like that.
And she killed Tuvix.
Oh, Tuvix had to die.
No. I'll fight you always. Oh,
and remember, too, that Janeway also had a history of making medical decisions without consent for members of her crew, such as B'Elanna, when she had the parasite attached to her. And B'Elanna flat out said, I do not want to be treated by that Cardassian hologram.
Yeah.
Janeway still ordered the doctor to proceed with the procedure against B'Elanna's wishes.
Oof.
And Janeway also had Seven of Nine surgically altered against Seven of Nine's direct wishes. I do not wish to be what you are, Seven of Nine's exact words. But Janeway still gave the order and told Seven of Nine blatantly, I'm going to make these medical decisions for you. I don't care what you have to say. So
this,
I think
this is
this
from
instance,
the guy with the Janeway tattoo.
I love
by
her.
The way.
I mean, I love Janeway. I will defend Janeway till I die. But I can also reason here in medical ethics. I don't believe that that's a reason why I don't think that there is a conversation about B'Elanna's actions or repercussions, because Janeway is just as guilty or more guilty of doing these same actions, making these same unilateral decisions.
Yeah.
Without and violating others' rights. When it comes to medical ethics, Janeway is far guiltier than B'Elanna.
Well, let's move on to assimilations and regenerations on that note. And I got a couple for each. I don't know if you get any, but let's see. I'll start with an assimilation. I think it was funny that it was Seven of Nine who was the one to tell B'Elanna she was pregnant. It kind of reminded me of, I guess, Worf delivering Keiko's baby. Just like that dichotomy of the two characters was just kind of funny, to be honest.
Well, I liked how he kept scanning her. He immediately went to, she has a parasite inside of her.
Yes, there's another life form. Which leads me to a regeneration. Okay. B'Elanna has literally no reaction when Icheb is saying there's a life form inside of her. She doesn't seem phased at all. Like, she just sort of looks there like faint, like, like there's no like, what do you mean a parasite? Get it out of me. What is happening? You know, she doesn't like if somebody was like, there's a mark. You have a being. There's a parasite growing inside you. I'd be like, what? Get it out of me. But she was just like, huh, okay, wait, I'm just going to lay here against this, you know, bridge console or this engineering console.
I'm going to defend that one of maybe thinking that B'Elanna may have had the thought in the back of her mind that, hey, maybe I'm pregnant. And so when this is going on, she's more internalizing, crap, I'm pregnant.
Okay. Yeah, or, I guess. Maybe.
Or, damn it, Tom did this to me.
It's all Tom's fault.
It's all Tom's fault. Go ahead.
You go ahead.
I was going to say, an assimilation I would like to give is the walk and talk with B'Elanna and Chakotay when Chakotay conveniently has to go get his pad when Paris catches up to them. I liked it just for how ridiculous it was. Like, oh, I forgot my pad in my quarters. Go ahead without me. Like, I'm going to let you guys have some time alone, knowing that neither one of them really wanted that. They kind of both wanted Chakotay there as the buffer, and Chakotay just got the hell out of Dodge.
You bring up a good point. There was a lot of balance to this episode. There were some dark beats, but there was also some very light comedic moments as well. So yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, that was a cute moment. Another one that's an assimilation for me is, well, I gotta bring up Bob Picardo again. Sorry, guys. I just love the Doctor. And him being way too excited to prepare B'Elanna for motherhood. And I'm going to tell you about this. And I'm going to tell you about this. And he was really getting in her face and driving her crazy and shoving the pad in her face and like, and oh my goodness, we're going to bring this baby into the world together, you know. And she's just like, she wants to stab him, clearly. And it was hilarious because he does comedy so well and his character is so well developed. I just loved it. I thought it was great.
It was great. One of the things I like about this episode, and something that Robbie McNeil himself grades episodes on in the Delta Flyers, and that's when every member of the cast has something to contribute to the episode. And yeah. I felt that this episode did that well, is everybody, all the characters were involved, and we got some interesting character pairings like Tuvok and Paris.
Yeah.
I thought was really good. You don't really see that a lot in Voyager. So it was nice to see a different pairing like that, especially two totally different characters coming together. Another thing I really liked about this is it really showed the characters being real in a sense that we often don't get in Star Trek. It's always the Starfleet persona, but we get the off-duty Tom and B'Elanna in their quarters and B'Elanna just ranting about her day of all the unsolicited advice for parenting and child rearing, and she's just on a tirade like a lot of us do ourselves at the end of a long day when we get home, just letting it all out, and Tom sitting there just being supportive. I really enjoyed that with this episode, as we got to see home life outside of Starfleet.
Yeah, it's true. It was like they weren't on like some adventure, like on a planet or trying to fix a spatial trajectory or something. You know what I mean? They were just traveling along, and this was another day. Yeah, good point.
Yeah, just a day in a life. Yeah, just a day in a life. Yep.
I do have another regeneration, and I have to. Sorry, Jeremiah. Neelix. It's not, I'm not even just, this isn't just a Neelix was in the episode, so he's a regeneration, but him just presuming to be the Godfather. Now, this is another like, seriously, Neelix, I want to stab you with a fork. Eye roll. Oh my, he's just the worst. How do you not think he's the worst? You love him, but how do you think he's the worst?
I do love Neelix, but I will agree that the eye roll on this one of going, God, Neelix, you cannot be the godfather to every child born on Voyager. You have Naomi. Let somebody else have the chance. And I'm sorry, but how did he even get that role with Naomi? Probably just by bursting into Samantha's quarters, declaring, I am the godfather of this baby. So yeah, no, I rolled that too. I liked B'Elanna's choice in the end for the Doctor, but I honestly expected it to be Chakotay.
Well, the Doctor was a good choice, but also it was sort of like a token, an olive branch, because she had, you know, genetically altered him without his consent. And she probably felt a little bit of guilt about that. So there's that. It was nice to see Manu in this episode as Icheb. And it was the first time I really noticed his mannerisms being structured in a similar way to Seven. I never really looked at him in that way until this episode, but I noticed the two of them standing there together, working on something together, and the way they communicated was kind of robotic. But I felt purposeful, you know.
Never caught that before?
No, this was the first time I'd caught that. But I don't watch as much Voyager as you. You really analyze stuff, but this is the first time that I caught it. And yeah, I don't know. I thought that was cool.
It's that Borg rigidity that Seven of Nine finally lost by Picard.
Yeah.
Another assimilation I would give is the ready room scene with Tom and B'Elanna arguing in front of Janeway, and Janeway just being like, enough. I'm not going to listen to this any longer. I liked it because she made a good point of stating, you know, I'm not going, as your captain, I'm not going to override my chief medical officer's medical advice. Mm-hmm. But as your friend, I will tell you this. I like that. If Janeway was playing both the captain and their friend, which I think is important to Voyager as a series, of they weren't just a command structure on a starship. They had become a family at this point.
Yeah, definitely by season 7. Well, trivia!
Trivia!
Trivia! All right. In the documentary, 50 Years of Star Trek, Roxanne Dawson referred to this episode as the moment that I felt was so haunting to me. She went on to say, I wept when I read the episode. It was a difficult and wonderful episode. And I can only imagine being an actor or actress and getting to play. She was playing like super warm and happy and bubbly at the beginning, but then, you know, calculated and methodical and controlled sort of midpoint, sad. She was kind of all over the map emotionally in this episode. She had a lot of range, a lot to play with, a lot of meaty stuff there.
And I think that's one reason I really enjoy this episode in particular, and B'Elanna also as a character, is that's a lot like me on most days. If I'm just all over the place with, you know, I'm really, really happy, or I'm really, really sad, or I'm full of Klingon rage. You never know which one's going to fall out of the hat.
And that's why you're on BQN, because you're with good company.
That's right. The Doctor calls Lieutenant Paris Tom. This is a rare example of the Doctor calling a crew member by their first name.
Sure, yeah, he doesn't really do it. It's Mr. Paris, right? Usually,
yes. And it's, I'm remembering what episode. Oh, it's Virtuoso, when the Doctor calls Janeway Catherine, and she rears back and was like, "Oh, I didn't know we were on a first name basis, Doctor."
Oh my goodness! I gotta rewatch that episode. I want to know why he did it. Don't tell me. I'll watch it.
I will tell you. Yeah.
Okay. When Paris starts listing the species aboard Voyager, Torres interrupts to say, and 140 humans. Voyager's crew complement was most recently mentioned as being 146 in the 5th season episode, Someone to Watch Over Me. Though this is likely to have changed a few episodes later during the events of Equinox Part 2, where 3 crew members are seen killed and 5 crew are integrated from the USS Equinox. Assuming the crew complement stood consistently at 148 cents, and that was Torres being exact, that would mean that there are only 8 non-human crew. That's sad.
Okay, that's entirely wrong, because I just did the math.
Yeah.
And I'm at 8 right now, and I haven't even started counting the known Bolians on the ship.
Okay. Memory so, Alpha, what are you doing?
Yeah, well, this is one thing with Voyager of the inconsistencies, is the crew complement. I was working on something recently where I was trying to list all of the casualties aboard Voyager. And compare that to the number of crew that they started with to see what the number of crew that they ended with. So there should have been 36 Maquis crew members at the stated in the episode Repression. Caretaker claims that 18 characters died when Voyager was pulled into the Alpha Quadrant, or pulled into the Delta Quadrant. So they started out apparently with 141 at the beginning of Caretaker. They had 18 dead. That would have left 123 living original crew members. Then 36 Maquis crew members. Then you add 4 of Neelix, Paris, Kes, and Tuvok. And I'm counting Tuvok there because you really couldn't count him in the 141 that Voyager started with, because he was on the Maquis ship. So that would have brought the crew total to 163 at the end of Caretaker.
Okay.
But Voyager never states that they had 163. It's always like 150 or in the 140s. So right there at the very beginning of Voyager, the math didn't add up.
Maybe in your head canon, you can just chalk it up to they're only counting the actual Federation crew members.
That could be. And I'm not even, I have listed here, like, except for the ones that are just, that have no description of name or race or anything. There were Betazoids, there were Vulcans on Voyager. Chell was a Bolian. You had Icheb, who was a Brunali. The three Borg children were different species. You had Neelix. So, I mean, yeah, there had to be more than eight.
Oh, shout out to the Betazed guy. He was only in a couple of episodes.
Oh, that's
Lon Suter. What a creepazoid.
I was thinking of Stati, who was the original helmsman. She was Betazoid.
Oh.
But yeah, Lon Suter was a Maquis, but was also Betazoid. And do you know who else he played?
Oh.
Lon Suter is Chucky from the Child's Play movies.
Oh my God, I love that.
Yeah.
That tracks.
Yeah.
And wasn't he in, was he in the Lord of the Rings too or no?
I don't know.
I don't know. We'll figure that out. But anyway, great actor. He's been in a lot of things.
I love Brad Dourif.
Yes. Brad Dourif. Always playing the creepazoids, but he does it so well.
He does. Yeah. And just so next time you watch a Lon Suter episode, just close your eyes and picture Chucky on board, like running through the corridors of Voyager. Lord.
With a little knife. But when I picture it, I've seen I don't know, is it a clip online? It was a dog dressed up as Chucky with the knife and the dogs running around the house in the costume.
Tom Paris goes to Tuvok to ask for advice about what he can expect from fatherhood, and he tells that Tuvok is the only father he knows. Tuvok is probably the only other senior officer who is a father, but other Voyager crew members are also fathers. In Initiations, Janeway mentions Iala's children, and in Prime Factors, Joe Carey notes that he has two children.
So there you go. You're right to be confused. It is a little confusing. Yeah, because he knows more fathers than that on Voyager.
Yeah.
He does.
And surely that there were others.
Yeah. And I like that he goes to Tuvok, though, and that Tuvok is being shown in this light. I think Tuvok was probably a really good dad. He's, I don't know, my favorite Vulcan. I don't know. He's great.
My favorite Vulcan, too. And I love Tuvok. I mean, Tuvok is, of course, I'm going to say Tuvok's my favorite Vulcan because Voyager is my favorite Star Trek. But if you look at Vulcan fathers, if you compare Tuvok.
Yeah.
Oh, Tuvok is the superior father.
And also, Spock is half human. This is,
it's
I
true.
Think, one of the rare times where we have a full Vulcan. And even T'Pol was full Vulcan, but she, you know, was, you know, a heroin addict or whatever. Not really heroin, but, you know, crack addict, I don't know. Which changed her physiology so that she didn't really act full Vulcan either.
Well, until T'Pol, we only had Spock and Tuvok as main character Vulcans in Star Trek at that point. We only had background or guest starring Vulcans in Next Gen. And I don't think we even saw a Vulcan till Take Me Out to the Holosuite in DS9.
And all the Vulcans were dicks.
Yeah. Especially Enterprise. Hopefully.
Especially Enterprise.
And you know what? The Strange New Worlds at Vulcans are still playing on that too.
Yes.
I mean, T'Pring's mother. Wow, what a Kai Wynn she is!
Yeah. Oh my goodness, I love that Kai Wynn's the swear word.
You like that? I'm like, how can I make this PG but also get my point across? Oh, I'm gonna call her a Kai Wynn.
We are going to steal that. Sorry. You can use it on Captain's Couch, too, but it's definitely going to be part of All Good Things now.
We're all part of the same family here.
She's such a Kai Wynn. Oh, that's such a Kai Wynn thing to say.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, in 2012, in a review of the series, Den of Geek ranked this as the 10th best episode of Star Trek Voyager. In 2019, they also ranked this as the 10th best morality play in the Star Trek franchise. I mean, out of all of Trek. So
that's
a good compliment.
That's a good compliment because what? We're pushing 900 episodes now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is in the top 10.
That's a lot of episodes to beat out for the top 10. That's pretty
People
cool.
People really like this episode. But a lot of people do.
I love it.
Well,
it's a Balana episode.
So. Yeah, this is a great place to organically go into final thoughts. So I will ask you first. What are your final thoughts on this episode, Captain Jeremiah?
You know, it's a great Voyager episode. It's a great Star Trek episode. It's a great B'Elanna episode. The only thing I wish that it would have had more of is a little bit more of Tom. I where he was utilized in the episode was great, but I felt that there should have been a little bit more, as it takes two to tango, and you know, obviously two to make the baby happen. So I felt that he should have had a, you know, there should have been more stuff with him in it than there was. That's really my only critique on the episode. Other than that, I love it. It's one of my favorites to revisit. It's a nice one to have in season seven as the series is wrapping up. The only thing I would have liked done differently is if they would have had the episode occur a little sooner, or maybe even had B'Elanna become pregnant in season six.
Well, around the time she was actually pregnant?
Yeah.
That would have been lovely. Yeah. I watched the episode with that thought, too.
That was season four when she was really actually pregnant. Yeah. Because that was Killing Game. So when they saw her pregnant in the Killing Game, that was her really pregnant.
Yeah. Oh, that was a good episode. We did cover that here. Were you here? Did you
I don't
come
think I will. I don't believe I did.
Oh. I'm turning into Amy. Have you been on this podcast before?
No, it's my first time.
Oh, Jesus. Our listeners. Oh,
love you, Amy.
Yeah, we love you, Amy. Oh, Lord. All right. Well, my final thoughts. This was an Amy pick, and thank goodness for her. She got me to go outside of my comfort zone here. I do love Voyager, but not really into kid episodes. This one revolved around babies. We got, you know, a happy B'Elanna at the beginning. I don't know. Then she did all that stuff with the doctor. Well, this isn't really high on my rewatch list, but I will say some positive things because it's Trek and I love Trek. And I enjoyed watching more Star Trek. I think that things that it does well is it is a good conversation starter. It is a great morality tale. The acting was knocked out of the park by everybody, including, like you said, that young girl that played young B'Elanna. She killed it. It was nice to see everybody having something to do, including Icheb being there. Yeah, there was a lot to like about the episode, even if it's not my favorite.
That's fair.
What shows are on BQN, you ask? Well, here's a rundown of some podcasts you might be interested in. All Good Things, a Star Trek Universe podcast covering all of Trek, hosted by Amy, Mark, Christos, and Kelvin. Bargain Bin Gamer, a YouTube show hosted by Davey, a self-proclaimed gamer who specializes in reviewing and showcasing affordable video games. If you're lost in the Delta Quadrant, check out The Captain's Couch, a Star Trek Voyager podcast hosted by Jeremiah sitting on Janeway's Ready Room couch. Cinema Z, a film discussion and review podcast showcasing films you probably missed but should definitely check out, hosted by Mark, Matt, and Laz. Beam Aboard the Galaxy Class, a Star Trek Next Generation podcast covering all of TNG, hosted by Amy, Joe, Rhea, and Kevin. History with the Zilagis, a snippet of historical events from around the world, hosted by Chrissy and Jason. For the newest Trek coverage, check out Infinite Diversity, hosted by Chrissy and Thad. Test your Trek knowledge with Trexperts Quiz, a Star Trek quiz show hosted and written by Davey. Union Federation, covering all things Star Trek and the Orville, which we all know is really a Star Trek show, hosted by Kyle, Kevin, Amy, and Haley. Spill the Tea with What's the Tea, Bev? A Trek current events and fan interview show hosted by Christos. And for our Patreon members, we have The Hive Mind, BQN's monthly roundtable discussion with hosts and listeners. It's Green, a cornucopia of topics hosted by Mark. And Amy's Math Moments, a quick look at math moments in Star Trek, hosted by Amy. We know you have a choice of podcasts to choose from, and we thank you for listening to BQN. Assimilate the audio.
Well, Jeremy, how about you tease what we're going to talk about next week?
Next week's episode, Man vs. Machine, Star Trek The Next Generation, The Nth Degree. And all I can see is that phallic nose piece.
Okay, so do you know what this episode's about?
It's a Reg Barkley episode on
really?
The holodeck. Yes.
Oh. Well, is this a Cyrano de Bergerac?
It might be.
Oh, see, my memory's not so good. Our listeners can take a shot because they said it this episode. I got to say it at least once. But no, cool. That is going to be Calvin Wood. And I think, Lou, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Davey's joining him because neither of them will be at STLV and the rest of us will be there. So thank
you
to both of them. I predict hilarity is going to ensue. I really do. The two of them at the helm of this show, who knows what's going to happen, but I bet it's going to be a great episode. So tune in, listeners.
Can't wait to hear it.
Well, we would love to hear what you thought of today's episode and hope you'll join our Facebook group, the BQN Collective, to continue our discussion there. You can also tweet your thoughts at All Good Pod. Please follow the network on Twitter and Instagram at BQN Podcasts. We've also partnered with our friends at the Fandom Podcast Network, where you can find us by searching their master feed. So, Captain Jeremiah, where can people find you when you are not counseling B'Elanna out of genetically modifying her baby?
You can find me over on Twitter at Captain Jeremiah. You can also find the Captain's Couch on Twitter at Captain's_Couch. You can also find me now on Blue Sky at Captain Jeremiah. I have not gotten to do much over there because I kind of forget about it, but I'm working on it. And as soon as I'm able, the Captain's Couch will also get established there as well. So, Mark, when you were not cringing at Star Trek Children, where can people find you?
Eye roll. Always cringing at Star Trek Children. Or children on TV. Just, anyway. Side note, Andy and I were watching HGTV the other day. We were watching a show, and each episode, like back to back, we were binging this particular like rehab show. Each episode was like focusing on making like room for the children. The children need an upgraded like bathroom. The children need this. And I'm just like, are you serious? The mother literally chose giving the kids a better bathroom than putting an ensuite in her house. Anyway, I'm done. Kids, any network. Nope.
This is why my children have four legs and are covered in fur.
Yes. Yes. 100%. Same here.
Although this one in here is about ready to kill me with the nauseous Klingon fumes coming out of it.
Oh, Lord.
It's like doggy Auschwitz in here.
Oh, no. Well, when I'm not doing that, people can find me in the BQN Collective Facebook group. They can also find me on Twitter at MarkWhite207. Or also at Blue Sky at MW207. And I also have another show, and it's called Cinema Z, and we cover some really cool films. Matt Jennings, Laz Marquez, and myself. And we have a couple cocktails. We sit back. We watch a movie. We discuss it. Have a lot of fun. We replay our favorite scenes. It's kind of hilarious. I think everybody should check it out. Anyway, that's just me.
I can't wait to check out the episode you just told me you recorded.
Oh my God, so good. Oh, well, I'm going to tease. So we just recorded Batman Returns. Yes.
And I'm so jealous I didn't get invited.
We spend the whole episode talking about Catwoman. Newsflash.
I mean, what else are you going to talk about when you talk about Batman Returns? I mean, the movie is nothing without Catwoman.
Yeah, pretty much. Love you, Danny DeVito, but you should have had your own spinoff. Anyway.
Right.
Please hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a star rating and written review. It helps others to find the show. You can also follow the entire network's podcast with our master feed by searching BQN.
At this time, we would like to thank our associate producers, Mahendran Radhakrishnan and Tim Cooper. A special thanks to Graham Kelly for our opening and closing music and Mark White for our amazing artwork each and every week.
Oh my, that's me.
That is you.
You said my name on the radio.
Mark also did the show art for the Captain's Couch, and it's amazing. I could not have done it at all, so thank you again.
If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to each week, you too can become a patron of the network on Patreon. We'll add you to the Hive Mind Facebook group so you can enjoy It's Green, Amy's Math Moments, and other network perks. With a monthly subscription of $5 or more, you can join our meetings on the Hive Mind Roundtable discussion on the second Saturday of each month. Visit patreon.com/BQN to get all the details and watch your messages. Thank you for listening.
We hope you'll join us as we search out
all good things.
Tom Paris goes to Tuvok to ask for advice about what he can expect from fatherhood, and he tells Tuvok... Tom Paris goes to Tuvok to ask for advice about what he can expect from fatherhood, and he tells that Tuvok is the only father he knows. That does not make sense.
That's part of the trivia.
All right, let me start this again. Tom Paris goes to Tuvok to ask for advice about what he can expect from fatherhood, and he tells that Tuvok is the only father that
he knows.
Why can't I get this?